fans, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is Dan Friedel filling in for VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports. Today's Thursday show hopes to propel you forward into a relaxing weekend filled with exciting sporting events. We have contributions today from my VOA colleague, Jim Stevenson, who produces his weekly Game Room podcast, a look back at the week in sports, highlighted this week by golf and tennis. My colleague Gwen Ooten will be here with the news of the newly named host country for UEFA's Euro 2024 tournament. But first, the quarterfinals are set for the FIBA Women's World Cup tournament in Tenerife, Spain. The Friday pairings are USA versus Nigeria, Australia versus China, Belgium versus France, and Canada versus Spain. While Team USA is always the favorite in international women's basketball, the big story here is Nigeria making it to the quarterfinals. It's the first time ever an African team has made it this far in the tournament. The Tigress made it to the quarters thanks to a one-point victory over Greece on Wednesday and a 2-1 finish in pool play. The other African team in the tournament, Senegal, went 1-2. The brackets are set as follows. The winner of Belgium and France will play the winner of the USA-Nigeria game. And the winner of Canada-Spain will play the winner of Australia-China. The final game will be played on Sunday. To help us with our coverage, we're joined by reporter Iron Mike Mbonye, who caught up with Ogu Odadu, an assistant coach of the Nigerian men's team, who is extremely proud of his female counterparts.
I am so satisfied. I feel good. I know we're going to be of the same frame of mind as a lot of Nigerians who follow basketball today. The girls have done us so, so proud. They have accomplished a lot in these past 3 days, winning a World Cup game for the first time, winning a second game back-to-back, playing in the qualifiers for the quarterfinals, and beating a team that is ranked way above them, all in the space of 1 week. So it is a great feeling now that we have. I'm sure all Nigerians are very, very happy right now.
Looking ahead to the quarterfinal match, how do you see whoever the opponent will be? How do you see the girls taking on any opponent in the quarterfinals?
Well, we know exactly who we are going to play as of now. We are going to play the USA. You know, the USA is not an easy team. They are the defending champions. They come with a bunch of WNBA players. So it's going to be a very difficult game. But I know that these girls will go there and they'll keep their heads up and they will compete. But for me, I would say now that with whatever it is that we have accomplished right now, it is like we have won the World Cup we have already won the World Cup. But not to worry, we will go back up there tomorrow. Nigeria will go out there and we will certainly compete. We'll not just go there and be part of anything. We will compete against the USA team and see what happens.
Not minding what the outcome of the match against the US will be, what do you think Nigerians have learned lessons from this World Cup?
Yes, we have taken a lot. I know even the male team would have taken a lot from this Nigerian team. It's all about determination, it's all about being patriotic, and it's all about knowing what you are there to do. The girls have composed themselves, they have played very well, they have shown us that it is not all about what the country can do for us, but what we can do for the country. I'm hoping that it will translate into other sports too, and then Nigeria will have this kind of representation at world levels in the near future.
That's Iron Mike Mbonye talking with Ogu Odadu, a coach of the Nigerian men's national team. The team was following the progress of the Tigres at the FIBA Women's World Cup tournament in Tenerife, Spain this week. I'm Dan Friedel, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Considering we have this Nigeria versus the USA matchup to look forward to, I thought it'd be nice to have an encore listen to the recent conversation I had with Nneka Ogwumike, a star player for the Los Angeles Sparks of the WNBA and a key member of this year's USA women's team. Nneka grew up in Texas, but her parents are from Nigeria. Nneka's sister, Chine, is also an outstanding player in her own right, playing for the Connecticut Sun and also working as a TV analyst for ESPN. I caught up with Nneka after a pre-World Cup exhibition match against Japan here in Washington, D.C. Welcome to the show, Nneka.
Thanks for having me.
First, wanted to get a sense from you about what it's like playing on Team USA with the legacy of this team and the history of the women's team from the USA. Is it a lot of responsibility?
A lot of responsibility, but it's a lot of honor and opportunity. I always relish in the moment anytime I get a chance to play with USA. And, you know, we have a championship culture, and I want to uphold that.
Tonight, you guys were back and forth with Japan for the first three quarters and pulled away in the fourth quarter to a pretty dominant victory. What should we expect from the team in the tournament coming up later this month?
Hopefully more wins, hopefully better progress. I think that with the limited time that we have, we're making great steps, you know, each day with practice, each day with games, and we want to be able to be competitive and do it Don's way and the USA way.
I'm joined by Nneka Ogwumike of Team USA and the Los Angeles Sparks. We're here on the campus of George Washington University. And Team USA just finished up a game with Japan ahead of the World Cup tournament coming up later on this month in Spain. What's it like playing on this team with so many outstanding players? Is it more fun than you usually have in your regular games in the U.S. and abroad?
Oh, yeah, it's definitely more fun, especially since you're not defending the players that you're usually playing with. You know, it's kind of a bit more organization to, I guess, like an all-star team. But it's even more fun because we relate on such a high level of play and competition and skill. So it's a rare opportunity to play with some of the best.
Tell me a little bit about growing up, playing basketball as a teenager. When did you realize that professional basketball, international level basketball, might be a possibility for you?
Probably not till my junior, senior year in college. You know, it took a while for me to really hone in on the fact that I could make a career out of it. And it was a great blessing. I've been able to have the opportunity to play at a high level. It's with some great institutions, great organizations, and it's really helped me develop my professional career.
But having the platform like you do, you just received an award for your community outreach. What kind of responsibility do you feel to use your platform to help other people?
I mean, I think it's a responsibility wasted if you don't do anything more than just play. Everyone has their different passions, and everyone wants to involve themselves in the community and in the world in different ways. I like to do it from an empowerment standpoint, especially for young girls and women, to just cultivate a future and generations to come of very strong, independent, and competitive women that are just amazing and really great at what they do.
Your parents are from Africa. You have Nigerian heritage. What kind of experience have you had going back to Nigeria and working with people there? And what is it like to have that, you know, you're an American, you're part of Team USA, but you also respect where your family came from?
I think the duality is a major advantage. And outside of just me, you see a lot of prominent Nigerians that are doing well, not just in the States, but also in other countries. I think we have an innate sense of hard work and excellence. And so that's something that's permeated my childhood with the help of my parents, of course. They raised us that way. I haven't had a lot of organized experience working with people back in Nigeria or in Africa, really. But I definitely see that in the future, and I want to tie it to what I do here as well.
Now, I have my own sibling rivalry with my brother, who's a couple years younger than I am, and here we are. We're both in our 40s, and we kind of go back and forth when we're at family events and that sort of thing. What is it like to have a sister who is almost an equally accomplished basketball player like you do?
It's great. I mean, there's no other person that can relate to me more. You know, our basketball paths have been different. But, you know, she she has the accolades, and even more so the path that she's forged off the court, still in sports, but in front of the television, I think is quite remarkable.
What was it like when you were kids with your basketball skills and you went to Stanford? And how did you balance the two parts of your life when you were growing up, the academics and the athletics? And did you ever have any conflicts between the two?
No, there weren't any conflicts. My mom did a really good job of getting us to understand that we had to be very well-rounded. So there was basketball, there was school, and then there was also extracurricular activities. We were heavily involved in a lot of things, and we wanted to make sure that we were very well-rounded. So the balance was kind of, it was a challenge, but it was one that we were willing to face.
That's Nneka Ogwumike, a member of Team USA, who I caught up with recently in Washington, D.C., ahead of the team's trip to Spain for the FIBA Women's World Cup tournament. Nigeria plays the USA on Friday, and we'll have the results of that game for you here on the Sunny Side of Sports. Keeping with sports in Europe, let's turn to France, where Tiger Woods and Team USA are prepping for the opening matches Friday with Team Europe at the Ryder Cup in Paris. My colleague Jim Stevenson looks back at Tiger Woods' big win on Sunday at the Tour Championship with this highlight from the Game Room podcast, a weekly program available for download at voanews.com.
80 PGA Tour wins, a benchmark Tiger Woods thought may never happen, as he has struggled with a crippling back injury and surgery. But 5 long years since his last tournament victory, Woods prevailed at the Tour Championship in Atlanta to cap one of sport's most amazing comebacks. His approach was simple.
The game plan was to shoot under par, and I birdied the very first hole right out of the gate. So, all right, now we'll play the next 17 under par. Even par, and we're good to go.
Woods kept his career streak perfect, now winning all 24 times he has led a tournament after 3 rounds. But he felt his two-shot win over American Billy Horschel seemed difficult.
It felt like more of a grind today because of where I kept leaving myself. It seemed like I was downhill, downgrain every single hole, and I was putting very defensive and conservatively all day.
Still, Woods knew the math was on his side.
Somebody from the pack would have to shoot an unbelievable round of the week. Felt like if I just went out there and just did my own thing and shot under par, and the tournament would be over.
Woods had a long struggle just to get back into playing shape amid many doubts.
Probably the low point was not knowing that if I ever be able to live pain-free again, am I going to be able to sit, stand, walk, lay down without feeling the pain that I was in.
With fused vertebrae in his back, the 42-year-old Woods sensed he had a chance if he could learn a new way to play.
If I could somehow piece together a golf swing, this year, I feel like I could do it. My hands are good enough, and I just didn't know if I could, piece together a golf swing, but somehow I've been able to do that, and here we are.
The win pulls Woods tantalizingly close to the all-time PGA Tour win record of 82, held by the great Sam Snead.
To get to the 80 mark is a big number. Sam is still ahead of me. I've still got, I feel like, a chance to play some more golf. Maybe I'll keep chipping away at that number and maybe surpass it.
As we follow Tiger Woods in the digital age, he reminds us he came from a different playing era not that long ago.
Well, when I came out here, there was no internet.
That's a clip from Jim Stevenson's The Game Room podcast, available weekly at voanews.com. I'm Dan Friedel, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Jim also previewed the Ryder Cup, which tees off tomorrow.
It is finally that time many golf fans have been waiting for, the Ryder Cup. The defending champion United States takes on Europe near Paris. The last time the U.S. team won on European soil was in 1993, a challenge U.S. captain Jim Furyk is looking forward to.
I'm excited. I think you look at both teams. I mean, both sides are stacked, strong teams, maybe the best that Europe and the United States has both had, so it should be a great battle this week, and I'm excited about the guys we have. I'm excited about the camaraderie, some great team players.
Furyk has a team of veterans, including Tiger Woods, who made the team thanks to his dramatic win at the Tour Championship. For Europe captain Thomas Bjorn, he has a lot of young players making their first Ryder Cup appearance.
They are all different, and they all have their personalities, and they take just different things, but a great bunch of guys, and with a lot of potential, a lot of I believe strongly in them this week. I believe this is a group of rookies that will stand up and be strong this week.
As a player, Bjorn was on three winning Ryder Cup teams, and he hopes his experience will inspire his young squad.
I'm here because I've played in Ryder Cups and I've been a vice captain in Ryder Cup, so you experience what it is. I learned a lot from the captains that I played under, and I hope these players learn something from me as they learn from other captains, but they have to go out and be them and you know, play the way they normally do. That's why they're here.
Jim Furyk says the event is unique as it's very different from the weekly routine.
We take these players out of their usual everyday life on tour, on a European tour, a PGA tour, put them in this team-like atmosphere, and you know, I think the best way to prepare them is to really let them know what the next 3 days entail. Realize it's a marathon. Realize they need to pace themselves. And if you give them a schedule, and they can kind of figure out what's best for each and every one of them and their partners.
And he likes the French venue.
It's a great venue. I think it looks good in setup. Rough is pretty thick, pretty tough. I think it looks similar to what we expected, you know, similar to a French Open setup.
Being a Ryder Cup captain is demanding and requires long hours to try and set the proper strategy for matching players against each other to gain valuable points. But it's an opportunity Bjorn relishes.
Yeah, there's not enough hours in the day, but that's okay. It's the most fun week and the most honored week I've ever going to have in my life, and I want to live it to full with this team because we are together in this and we want to win that trophy back.
Jim Stevenson also looked back at the recent Laver Cup in Chicago, won once again by the Europeans. Many people wonder if the tournament will have the staying power of the Ryder Cup.
The Ryder Cup atmosphere is not just on the golf course. It has extended to tennis.
No, I mean, it's like the Ryder Cup, you know, more than the All-Star game. This is not an All-Star game. I mean, we're here to play to win. There's a lot of prize money at stake.
American tennis great John McEnroe led Team World at the Laver Cup in Chicago against defending champion Team Europe. With a raucous crowd in the stands and some of the best players in the world playing, McEnroe says it was a big deal.
How often does this happen, where you get the best of the best from all over the world to play? I don't know of any other scenario, including Davis Cup. I can't see how we wouldn't look at this and say this is a major positive. And it's, you know, you got Rod Laver, who's like the Babe Ruth of tennis, and you've got Roger Federer behind it, for starters. I mean, among other things. I'm the poor, I'm happy to be here.
But it was Team Europe, led by Swedish legend Bjorn Borg, that won the Laver Cup for a second year in a row, 13-8. McEnroe said his team came so close to winning.
I thought we were going to win this. I really did. So, we started a couple matches earlier. We could have won. We didn't. But, you know, we were sort of desperately unlucky, I think, in a way, and we could have very easily won this.
The final day saw the series advantage swing back and forth between the two sides. World won the doubles as Americans John Isner and Jack Sock beat Roger Federer and Alexander Zverev from match point down to snatch the series advantage. Amid the competition, Federer was thrilled to have the connection between young players and living legends.
I just wanted everybody to have really a nice time, a good time, celebrate tennis, give the legends a platform, have the young guys rub shoulders with great players, future legends, legends already, like Borg and McEnroe and Laver, and having other legends around as well. I think it's so helpful, and it motivates you so much as a player to know its history a little bit.
In singles, Federer played Isner, and the Swiss great saved match points in a thriller to win 6-7, 7-6, 10-7. German Alexander Zverev rallied back against South African Kevin Anderson to win 6-7, 7-5, 10-7. And that gave Team Europe the necessary points to seal victory for the second straight year. Zverev was thrilled to win and get past the pressure of the event on his shoulders.
No, it's pretty good until I had about 600 kilos of weight on me, and then I was like, just get the hell out of me. But it felt good. I mean, obviously, it was an amazing feeling. You know, as I said, our team is amazing. And throughout the whole weekend, we had such great energy.
Jack Sock was thrilled with the chance to play team tennis.
The team bond was out of this world, and to experience it again, we all grew closer for sure this week.
While Team World fell short, Kevin Anderson is ready for next year.
Today's atmosphere and all week, I mean, blew my expectations away. I thought it was just, you know, incredible. And so as tough as it is, I think, you know, we all knew we gave it our best shot, and you know, we can't do more than that, so we'll just have to use it as motivation for next year.
And Australian Nick Kyrgios found some new friends that he's been playing against for some time.
You know, I feel like I've built a lot of relationships from this event that, you know, we're going to have for a lifetime. You know, I've never been close to Nicholas Jarry in my life, but now, you know, we just got this bond. I think it's awesome. I think it's a great way for tennis to keep moving forward, and at the end of the day, we're entertainers, so you know, I think a lot of the world is watching this week, so it's pretty successful.
Next up, my colleague Gwen Ooten has this update on the trending sports topic of the day, and that's the news that Germany will host the 2024 European Men's Soccer Championship. Sporty greetings, Gwen!
Sporty greetings, Dan. The president of UEFA made the announcement in Switzerland, and Germany made their own announcement on Twitter. Germany's official page says simply, "The Euro 2024 is coming to Germany, and we cannot wait." Germany was chosen over their sole competitor, Turkey, and received 12 out of 16 votes. Germany was heavily favored to win due to superior stadiums and infrastructure and their proven track record of staging football events. During the campaign, Germany manager Joachim Löw talked about what winning the bid would mean for his country.
We hope in Germany all that we will get this tournament because it's very important for the football, for the kids, for the clubs, for the federation. Everybody, we saw this 2006 when we had the World Cup in Germany, and this is important for a country.
Well, Löw expressed his excitement Thursday on Twitter, writing, "A tournament like this is extraordinary for our country and can be a huge motivation for young players. It's a good step for the coming years. Everyone at the association can now start planning." Well, for Turkey, this marks its fourth unsuccessful bid in this event, having also lost in 2008, 2012, and 2016. UEFA cited several concerns with the Turkish proposal, including infrastructure, transportation, and human rights assurances. However, UEFA summed up Germany's bid by saying the country has a long and stable history of successful events, and all political and football structures are in place. Markus Stenger is head of Germany's Euro 2024 bid, and in the days leading up to Thursday's announcement, he spoke about his campaign slogan and the meaning behind it.
Well, our campaign claim was United by Football. And we believe that the power of football is massive, and therefore we want to show the world, we want to show Europe that we all can celebrate together a fantastic football fest, no matter which country you're coming from. And the good thing is, wherever you're coming from, it's quite easy to get to Germany. Therefore, I think we are the perfect choice.
Matches are already set to be played in a total of 10 stadiums. The final will be held in Berlin's Olympic Stadium, the site of the 2006 World Cup final and the 2009 World Athletics Championships. And expect to see the video assistant referee. Following its trial run at this year's World Cup in Russia, it has been approved for next year's Champions League and at UEFA Euro 2020, which will be held in several host cities across Europe. So it will no doubt make an appearance in Germany at Euro 2024 in only 6 short years. More sporty news to come. Back over to you, Dan.
Thank you, Gwen. And just one quick sunny side of sports shout out to Max Scherzer of the Washington Nationals, who got his 300th pitching strikeout of the season the other night in the Nats' win over the Florida Marlins. He's just the 36th pitcher to get 300 strikeouts in the major leagues since 1901. And that wraps up the September 27th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to VOA producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Chang. And thank you for tuning in. I'm Dan Friedel, in for VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
I get it.
Hello, I'm Douglas Simpoga, host of VOA's Reporters Roundtable. Join us every Thursday as we discuss important African topics and events. I'll have a panel of African journalists and expert guests to discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important African news topics. That's Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. This is James Barty, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
Border Crossings.
Join host Larry London.
Larry London.
On Border Crossings, VOA's only worldwide music request hour.
Oh.
Every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in for the biggest hits and amazing artists. Win prizes and get the latest news from exclusive celebrity interviews.
Ooh.
Send your requests to Facebook at VOA Larry London, Twitter at Border Crossings, or Instagram at Border Crossings VOA, or call 202-619-2077 and have your favorite music played to the entire world.
Ah.
Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal, only on the Voice of America.
This is a public service announcement from VOA Africa.
The battle against Ebola does not end when a patient survives the virus. I am Dr. Conde Greaves. Many survivors return home to their villages only to face stigma based on fear and ignorance. We must fight against stigma and welcome Ebola survivors back into our communities. They are no longer contagious and pose no threat to you. Thousands of orphan children also need your support. Imagine losing your mother and father to Ebola. Their tragedy is often compounded by rejection and isolation when they return home. This is wrong. They are not sick. We must welcome orphan children back into our communities. They have suffered enough. We must also respect our healthcare workers. Many have given their own lives so that others may have a fighting chance. Learn the facts about Ebola. Knowledge is life.
This was a public service announcement from VOA Africa.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
VOAAfrica.com.
On VOAAfrica.com, the news updates never stop. Our primary goal is to keep you informed.
VOAAfrica.com, your trusted source for news and information.